It's the 19th of January. So welcome back. The chat room is open. That's truthergirls.chatango.com. And I'm your host, Truth the Girl Sonia, up in Montreal here, freezing my butt off. And I'm very happy to say now I'm going to be talking to Max Egan. He's an Australian activist, a researcher, the author of Earth's Forbidden Secrets, Part 1, Searching for the Past. He's also the host of Surviving the Matrix on American Voice Radio on Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays. And he was the producer of a documentary film called The Awakening. And I have made a blog post on him, which I'm going to put into the chat room. So welcome to the show, Max.
Thanks for having me on, Sonia. Pleasure to be here.
Well, thanks so much for joining me. So you've done a lot of research. I mean, I went to your, you know, I've seen your website, and you've got your radio show, your YouTube channel where you upload your radio shows, and I see you've done really a lot of in-depth research on things like, you know, the hidden things in archaeology, for one, which I find very interesting, which you talk about in your book, and encouraging people to question this area, like all other areas of our lives, you know, question what we've always accepted to be facts, and also the nature of reality and the nature of our human experience. So how did you start researching these topics?
Well, it all sort of started with ancient history. It started when I was very young, when my mother showed me a picture of the pyramids, actually, when I was about 8 years old. And she said, have a look at this thing, son. Nobody knows how they built this. And I looked at it and I thought, it looks pretty ordinary. It's just a pyramid. And I kind of went out and made one in the sand outside and thought, that's not so hard. And then when I kind of looked into it, I just was absolutely dumbfounded when I read all the specifications of this thing and how nobody actually did know how they built it. And the quest started there. I put all the comic books away and I started reading encyclopedias. I just wanted to know how they built the pyramid. And when you start investigating it, one thing leads to another and you go through the whole circle and you realize that there's just this massive cover up going on, and it relates to everything. It isn't just the past. It's now, it's the future, it's technology, it's everything, everything about our society and our social structure. Nothing is what it seems. And so I put all the stuff that I've got in the book together because I thought it would be a good starting point for people. I thought that if they can understand that they've been lied to in every instance about every aspect of our past, then it might cause them to question what's going on in the present.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of things do you think that they're hiding from us? What have the pyramids taught you?
Well, you know, what it shows you is that everything that they've told us about history is not true. I mean, the pyramids are absolutely amazing. God knows what they were for. We can only speculate. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they were some sort of energy device, but I mean, we can only speculate. I mean, people, they've been called everything from an energy device to a tomb to a giant water pump. But I mean, it's interesting to note that there's never been any mummies or bodies or hieroglyphs found in any Egyptian pyramids. This is a huge fallacy that people believe these things were tombs. And often when you see a show about the pyramids, a television show or a book or anything, they'll show a picture of a mummy, then they'll show a picture of the King's Valley, and then they'll show a picture of the pyramid. And it's just that association that makes you think these things were tombs. But there was no mummies ever found in any pyramid. And they're completely unadorned. There's no hieroglyphs in any of them. There are some forgeries in the Great Pyramid, but these were made by a man called Howard Vies, or Howard Vies. And he was a known forger, and he's one of the men who sort of blew their way in there, and he hacked up above the King's Chamber, and he found an inscription on the side of a stone in one of the hollow cavities above the King's Chamber, which is not where you'd put an inscription anyway. I mean, it was almost like someone signing their name for the building, but it's been proven to be a forgery. It was done much more recently than the building of the pyramid. It was probably done by Vice himself.
Why did they call it the King's Chamber then if nobody was buried there?
Well, the thing is that Vice put this inscription there and said, basically saying that it was built for Khufu. And they call it the King's Chamber because it's got this sarcophagus-looking shape in there. It's got this, you know, oblong shape where you could put a body in there. There is speculation that that's where the Ark of the Covenant actually once sat. But that's another story. But there's been no bodies found here. I mean, they call it the King's Chamber for want of a better word, I think. They see this square box and they go, oh, must have been a mummy in there. But I mean, look, they never found anything. They blew the doorway open. They tapped around on the outside until they found what sounded different and they blew a hole through it and they found the descending shaft, the way into the pyramid. And when they got there, there was nothing inside. They were expecting to find all this treasure and there was nothing. And you know what they said, the reason there was nothing there? They said grave robbers. Okay? I mean, they blew the doorway open and they reckon it was grave robbers. Somehow these grave robbers got in there. They took this 3-ton lid off the sarcophagus. They stole the body. Then they put the lid back on and they smuggled everything out and sealed the outside up again all nicely. And it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all. These are things that we don't usually hear. I mean, you know, mostly what I'd heard was that they were tombs, although I found out recently that that wasn't true. But, yeah, in a very clever way, they always just make us associate the mummies with the tombs. Where did the mummies come from?
Well, they all come from the King's Valley. There's a Valley of the Kings in Giza, which is full of tombs. And there's all of these buildings there that are full of tombs, full of mummies, full of it's like a big graveyard. And the pyramids are nearby. But they always show you the mummies and then they show you the pyramids, they show you the inscriptions, and you just put it all together in your head. You just think, oh, these inscriptions must be on the walls of the pyramids, and the mummies were found inside the pyramids. But it's completely untrue. There's never been any mummy found in any pyramid in Egypt.
So what I had found recently was that, not only are the tombs not... the pyramids, not tombs, but there are all kinds of what they call out of place artifacts that you talk about in your book. And I wrote down a few that you mentioned, like electroplating. Back in Egyptian times, electroplating jewelry, that they had technology for that, machine cut Aztec slabs that looked like they had some kind of machinery back then, a map of Antarctica that was free of ice.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. There's things lying all over the planet that which say, hey, guys, there's a lot more going on than what you think. I mean, the Nazca lines, the Nazca plains you can only see from the air. You know, there's so many things, the Ica stones, the little earplugs I love. They found these little obsidian, they say they're earplugs because they're really, really tiny. They're big enough to fit inside your ear. But they look like they're made of glass, little hollow tubes, and they're obviously machine-made. And the slabs, like you say, in Pumapunkah, that have perfect cuts on them and drill holes at specific distances and specific depths. And they say, oh, they did this with copper tools and bamboo drills, you know. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. These things show evidence of ancient technology, and we're just taught that it isn't true and that it all happened in this linear way that they tell us. And the maps are fascinating as well. I mean, the Makeda map and the Borsch map and the Perry Reese map and all the maps that show Antarctica years before it was apparently discovered. And some of these maps even have correct longitude, and longitude wasn't even discovered.
So what do you think is going on here? I know that whenever they come up with these things, they just sort of dismiss them or cover them up. And archaeologists who've made these discoveries, if they insist that these challenge the accepted views of archaeology, or, you know, even if it comes to a timeline for when a civilization was found in a certain place, even if they use uranium dating and they can prove that these artifacts were from much earlier than what would be expected, that they're just their careers are ruined, they're blacklisted, and it's all covered up. So what do you think is going on here?
Well, it's all about removing us of our power, because if we understand the power that we had in the past, because, and then there's all this speculation, all these things were built by aliens and all that sort of stuff. Well, I don't think so. I think we built them all. I think we had a lot more higher senses. I think we had a lot more ability back then than what we do now. I think that there's something's happened to the human race that's completely shut us down and cut us off from who and what we are. You find that our endocrine system is closed down, our pineal gland is blocked off, and we've got all of this stuff lying around the planet which tells a completely different story to what they've given us as history. And we had the technology to do this, and they've taken all of these things away from us, and they've created this new explosive, destructive, immoral technology that we now use now. And the technology, everything in our society, our explosive motors and our ways of destroying the planet to build structures rather than building in harmony with it, all of these things are very, very destructive, and it appears to be the exact opposite of what we would naturally do. I mean, when you look at our society, you look at our civilization, if you think of the human race, I mean, we're naturally tribal creatures. If we were living out there in the wild, like if you're out in the wild there and you suddenly met other people like you, you'd tend to want to hang with them and create a little bit of a community, you know, a little tribal community. And you think about that, and these gradually become more and more civilized. But then how did we come up with this? How did this tribal sharing community turn into this destructive, divided society that we now have? It doesn't make sense. There's been some sort of intervention that's cut us off from who we are and led us down this path.
Well, definitely. I mean, when you look at, as I mentioned to you the other day, we were talking that I'd been reading Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And so the corporate empire decided to go around the world and, well, for their own benefit, industrialize various nations and say, oh, this is going to bring economic growth and this is going to bring you all the benefits of our culture. When these cultures all over the world who were not industrialized, not particularly technological, they had something that we didn't have, that we've lost here for all our technology. As you say, we're all disconnected from each other. Our society is really sick. And it seems that our view of technology, we think that we benefit from it. We think, oh, well, isn't it great that we have iPods and we have all these devices and things like that? But it's been a big part of what has made us so sick. And that when we bring the benefits of what we call modern life to unindustrialized places, all we really do is bring them a lot of problems. And, you know, so we think of technology as having to do with televisions and iPods and motorized vehicles. But it looks to me like the ancients had technology, but it was technology and very advanced technology, but very different from what we had and not destructive to the environment or to society.
No, well, that's the thing. I mean, why would we be so destructive? Whether you believe in evolution or creation or whatever, why would God or evolution create a species that was so in disharmony with its environment? And it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem that we could possibly have evolved naturally. It doesn't seem like we could possibly have been created to be the way we are. So something's happened. And if you're working in harmony with nature and you're understanding frequency and understanding reality and you've got all your higher senses online, it makes sense that you would be building things and working in harmony with nature, which is what all the ancient structures did. And we don't do any of that. We build temporary accommodation. You know, we think it's really good because it's shiny and it's tall and it's big and it's impressive. We build these high rises, but these massive, huge buildings that they build in cities like New York, they're just temporary accommodation. They're temporary buildings. Nothing's built to last over about 100 years. In 100 years, what's New York going to look like? How are you going to be able to bring those buildings down and replace them with new ones? Because it's a capitalist sort of structure in our society, so everything's got to be made to be replaced. You can't make anything to really last, because if you do that, you don't have a business plan, you know, because it's all based around business. And the technology that we're given, all this shiny stuff, it's just shiny stuff. It removes us from ourselves. And it's also done something else, which is quite dangerous, really. What it's done is it's created a virtual world and a virtual storage house for information. Like most people, they get information now, they save it on their computer, they save it on a hard drive, they don't write it down in a book, or they don't buy the book, or they might put it on a CD or whatever. But what happens when the technology stops? If the power goes out one day, all this information's lost. No one's got it there in hard copies anymore. It all exists in virtual storage. So that means it can be just taken away at any time. And we've lost a lot of our life skills through the acquisition of technology. A lot of people, modern times, don't even know how to go and grow a garden. They wouldn't know how to survive in the wild if they were just dumped in the forest. I mean, my mother or grandmother would be able to survive in the wild if they were dumped in the wild. Would you? You know what I mean? Would a modern person be able to survive if they were just left to their own devices? We've lost all of those skills, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a break, and stay tuned, everyone. I'll be back with Matt Deegan on The Truth or Girls in a moment. Hey, welcome back to The Truth or Girls. Hi, everyone. I'm Truth or Girl Sonia, and you're listening to The Truth or Girls. And the chat room is open. That's truthergirls.chatango.com. And lines are also open if you'd like to call in and talk to me or Matt, my guest, Max Egan. It's 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. So I'm talking to Max Egan. He's an Australian activist, researcher, and author of Earth's Forbidden Secrets, Part 1, Searching for Our Past. And he also has a show called Surviving the Matrix on American Voice Radio, and he's the producer of the documentary film The Awakening. So welcome back, Max.
Thank you, Sonia. Nice to be back.
Nice to have you back. So you were just talking about how we store information, and that was making me think of something. Oral tradition, you know, a lot of tribal cultures, what we call primitive cultures, which aren't really primitive, they used oral transmission of history, oral tradition, and memorization. And we not only do we not write notes of things and even read books, we read links, we save our links, we save our documents on the internet, but a lot of people, you know, probably don't use their, well, let's say all people, we don't use our brain the way that we used to. And, you know, I remember when I heard about oral traditions, and I was always kind of told, oh, it's like playing telephone. So these things were transmitted orally. So you can imagine how distorted they must have gotten over the years. As if things don't get distorted in writing, which they do. You know, how many urban legends have been spread through newspapers? But actually that the people who practiced oral tradition transmission of history were trained memorists. And so their information was probably as reliable, maybe more reliable, and probably more secure, as long as you don't kill the people who have the information. And they taught it to children as well from the time they were young.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, you can always change what's written in a book. I look at 1984. They used to have people in there just specially designed to go and rewrite newspapers, you know. I mean, a lot of people kind of hypnotized by the written word. If they see something in writing, it kind of, it's like a talisman, you know. Writing, especially the English language, it's like a series of incantations and talismans, and you're looking at what is essentially hieroglyphs. And if it's written, people tend to believe it. But I've actually seen Australian Aboriginal elders who are law keepers who hold traditional stories, and I've seen these people argue for 3 hours over the pronunciation of a single word. So, and that's just not even its meaning, that's just how it's pronounced. So there's no question that these stories were handed down accurately, because I mean, if they're going to argue for 3 hours over the pronunciation of a single word, well, you know, they make sure, because the law keepers meet all the time, and they go through the stories, and the stories must be the same for every law keeper. There can't be changes, you know, because otherwise the law changes, and that's not what it's about. But with the internet, I mean, we've transferred everything that we are is being transferred into this virtual world, and we don't have oral tradition anymore. We don't even have written tradition. We don't get information from someone and write it down in our journal or our diary anymore. We put it on our blog. And if the internet goes down, or if the power goes off, or, you know, there is some sort of cataclysm, or there is whatever, something that happens that puts a jolt through this society, and we lose access to that virtual world, then where does all that knowledge go? It just goes into cyberspace. And suddenly we've lost all of our knowledge, all of our history, and then it can be rewritten. And you can tell people anything you want. You can tell the next generation anything you want. If you have the next generation of children grow up and are born into the world, you could tell them anything you want, and they will believe it because it's coming from their elders. So that's what I mean. You can easily change history. And what's happened is we seem to have had all of the higher senses that we have been closed down, and all of our connection to the world's been closed down, and now we're being offered this virtual version of it, this digital version of it. And they're leading us down this path to a basically a machine world. They want to merge man with machine, transhumanism, eugenics. They've been talking about it for years. Because even our societies, you know, humanity is becoming more and more regimented, more and more machine-like. There's a rule for everything. You can't just be born and be all that you can be. You have to follow these certain guidelines and walk down these certain paths and get these certain certificates and these pieces of paper and all this rubbish that they teach you is real. And we've lost who we are. And that's the key to the whole thing. And even what we are, we were talking in the break about the real nature of reality and the real nature of a human being. What is a human being? Flesh and blood. But where does that come from? What's it all made of? You know, ultimately, it's all made of energy and it's all made of atoms. And atoms are empty space. If you look at physics, they're empty space. Atoms are 99.99999% empty space. So that's five nines after the point. So that's like 1/10,000 of 1% of an atom is actually matter. And if everything's made of atoms, then everything's made of nothing. So how is it there? You know, it's really interesting when you start getting into it, but you start applying spiritual understandings to science and you start seeing what's really going on here. And then you start looking through science, look through cellular biology and look through physics and look through quantum physics, and you start finding that these scientists are also realizing that science can never truly be explained until you add spirituality into the equation, and that they both actually complement each other, and you start gaining a real understanding of what's going on here and how reality works, and your whole world changes. Well, it has for me anyway.
Well, like you said, we brought this up on the break, and this is very interesting to me because since I was quite young, I had experiences that, you know, most people would say it's not possible. For example, and I've mentioned this on the radio a few times, you know, things that look like a kind of clairvoyance. And, you know, I'm not somebody who sits around with a crystal ball at all. I don't, it's not something I could just do at will anytime. Not really. Well, in some cases, but sometimes I would take a person's hand when I was about 9 years old and I would say, let me read your palm. But I didn't really know much about palmistry. I didn't really know anything about palmistry, but I would take their hand and all of a sudden I could see into them. And even sometimes when I just meet somebody and with the first tone of their voice, and the less I know the person or less I knew the person, the better, the more I would get this sense of all these things about them. And my friends would ask me stuff, or people that I knew would ask me stuff about themselves or other people because they thought it was kind of neat. And I didn't really know what to make of it and how to explain it, but somehow I could see inside, you know, oddly enough, sometimes very specifically into a person's emotional state. I mean, I would meet people in the park that I had never met before and tell them their life story, tell them stuff that had happened to them, tell them, I could see their emotional state and what kind of event it was connected to. I would just know particular things, not everything, but particular things about them that were relevant for some reason for them to pay attention to at that time. And sometimes I would see things that hadn't happened yet, and it, you know, and this still happens. And I would say, I see this car accident, so I'm telling the person, I'm warning you, please listen to me. You know, I'd always say, I'm telling you, for some reason, that's the phrase I'd use. I'm telling you, stay off this street. I'm telling you, be careful with this and that. And the thing is, they don't listen very well. So no matter what, it usually just comes to pass. So if I would be saying, I see this happening, I see that, and I give them a warning and then it doesn't happen, you could say, well, how would you know that it was a premonition? But because they don't listen and it happens anyway, it pretty much it always, you know, pans out. So these kind of things, this shouldn't be possible. How could I, and sometimes it's in a dream, and how I have this one person that I've known for 20 years that I've had this strange connection with him through dreams, hardly ever see him. First time I saw him was in a dream before I even came back to Canada. And I saw him, when I met him, I didn't even realize it was him until I saw his tattoo, and then it just clicked. This is the guy. I got hired at a place that I'd seen in advance. Everything was there to the detail, and I told other people about it in advance. You know, these kind of very, very specific things, and my son seems to have some ability like that, where he sends me a picture from time to time. He's not able to communicate, and then pop, this picture just comes up into my head, and I know exactly what he wants or what he's trying to say. And people would say, well, this isn't possible, because we're just flesh and blood, and there's speculation about what happens when you die. And most people would think, you know, a lot of people think, well, you die, the computer's switched off, and that's the end. And some people would like to allow for the possibility that you have some kind of spirit energy that lives on, and do you go up to heaven or what? But as you're saying, you know, when it comes down to it, we're really made of nothing. It's like we're made of energy. So there's a lot of possibilities of what we could call reality. We have a lot more potential than most people realize.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we are absolutely made of energy. And your body basically downloads a frequency that is you. And it downloads it from the surrounding field. If you think of everything in reality is made of this energy, the space between you and somebody else, the empty space around you, it's not empty. It's full of energy. And that energy coalesces to make physical matter based on perception. Now, you have DNA in your body, and that's tuned to a certain frequency, and so that's who you download. You download Sonia because that's what your DNA is tuned to download into the biological computer that is your body. And so you experience life from Sonia's perspective, and you are the absolute center of Sonia's universe. Now, you have all these parallel universes and multiverses because there are so many people. Each person is the center of their own universe. They're experiencing the same reality from their perspective, so they're completely unique, but they ultimately come from the same source, which is the energy source of the universe itself. And as you say, there is no matter. I mean, atoms are empty space. You know, nothing ever touched anything, ever. That's amazing when you really think about it, because atoms are all empty space and everything's made of atoms. That's profound. When you think of, you know, 99.99999%, that means less than 1% of the chair I'm sitting on is actually here. And people think, well, that's amazing. Well, actually, no, it's a lot more than amazing. It's just mind-boggling. I mean, how can it possibly be? So you are absolutely an energetic being more than you are even a biological being. And when you're having these experiences, you're looking at someone and you're reading them and seeing what's in them. This is like higher senses that we have, because all information that you are and all information that anybody is encoded in the water in their body, because water has memory. Every emotion, every experience that you have, everything that is you and everything you do, everything you feel, is all encoded into the water in your body. You are 85% water, and it's stored there. And when your body dies and your spirit or your frequency leaves your body, the water in your body returns to the groundwater, and it replenishes the memory. It flashes the RAM. It adds that experience to the water on the planet. So you can see all information by reading the water. You can see all information that exists in the energy field. When someone has an emotion or a feeling, they project an energy into the surrounding field, and that imprints into the field permanently, and that can always be read by others. All you have to do is be able to access that energy, access that information through a higher sense.
Yeah, and you know, my husband knows me well, and he knows how I am with this. He knows that it's real. I mean, anybody who question it, he'd say, oh, no, it's real, what she does. And, you know, I'm just an ordinary person. I think that we all have these abilities. It's just we've been told that we can't. They don't exist. It's not possible. This is just hokey stuff. But I refuse to dry it up. It's like we're taught from a young age to dry these things up. But I refuse to do that. And I guess I somewhat, you know, cultivated it on and off. But at some point, you know, I was talking to my husband about this, and I said, it's like all of time is happening simultaneously. Like, there's no past and there's no future. So
well, it is,
if you
yeah.
are, if you're able to get into that space outside of these constraints that we usually have of thinking that it's happening in a linear way, that you're able to sort of access all parts at one time. And so the person's past is not separate from them now. It's there with them right now. Like you're saying, it's encoded into you somehow, and I don't really know exactly how this works, but it is there with you. It's encoded, and so is your future. And then that really makes me wonder sometimes whether everything is predetermined, because, you know, when I say to somebody that I see this with a car accident or some other thing, and they don't listen and it comes out that way, then I think, well, do we really have any free choices? It's all sort of predetermined, or do we have many paths that we can take, or does it not really matter because from our perspective we have them, and so we might make the apparent choice to act a certain way or to cultivate a certain aspect of ourselves, our higher selves or our lower selves, and that our path may go in a particular way And for all intents and purposes, we made a choice. You know, we had free choice. But it could be that actually, as you say, there are parallel existences. And so all the paths are already there. And you can just see that if it continues on this trail, this is where it's going. And unless, is it possible for something to intervene and deviate the path? See, I wouldn't know because the path that I, when I see something like that, it's like that path is already mapped out and I can see this thing in the future was not really in the future. It's here with you already because it's all one. And I would try to warn the person, but they don't listen and then I see it goes that way. But that was the reason maybe that I could see that future was because of the choice that they are making on a vibrational level or what's happening on a vibrational level and that it's leading in that way.
Yeah, all information exists in the field, and there is no time as we know it.
Oh, we're going into a break. Speaking of, there's no time as we know it, but it is time for a break. But stay tuned. I'll be back with Max Egan in a moment.
Just look at us. Everything is backwards. Everything is upside down. Doctors destroy health. Lawyers destroy justice. Universities destroy knowledge. Governments destroy freedom. The major media destroys information. And religions destroy spirituality. I think there's more to know here.
All you ever hear about in this country is our differences. That's all the media and the politicians are ever talking about, the things that separate us, things that make us different from one another. That's the way the ruling class operates in any society. They try to divide the rest of the people. They keep the lower and the middle classes fighting with each other so that they, the rich, can run off with all the money. Fairly simple thing happens to work. You know, anything different, that's what they're going to talk about. Race, religion, ethnic and national background, jobs, income, education, social status, sexuality, anything they can do, keep us fighting with each other so that they can keep going to the bank.
Hey, welcome back to Truth or Girls. Well, hi, everyone. I'm your host, Truth or Girls, Sonia. The chat room is open. That's truthorgirls.chatango.com. And the lines are open and... Wow, I'm sorry. There was somebody calling that I didn't see your call. So sorry about that. I'm talking to Max Egan. Welcome back, Max. Is it all right if we take this call?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to do that. Hi, area code 520. Welcome to the Truth of Girls. You're on the air.
Greetings, greetings. I've been enjoying what's being said. I just had the inspiration to call. Of course, all things are based on inspiration. Mr. Egan, thank you very much for bringing up those points. To my astonishment, people are not speaking out against these places that build these pillars of ignorance known as universities. For there never was a primitive man. There's just the primitive thinking man, I've discovered. I've been applying a lot of the things that the ancients spoke about in water purification, metals transmutation and energy production with 100% success. And when you go out and try to speak to anyone that has any formal education, they say, well, you're probably getting high on the wine you're making or something. And I've made some very simple discoveries. One, for example, is man adds and subtracts and nature divides and multiplies. And with that simple concept, you can completely disprove all of their silly laws of thermodynamics and laws of physics as being, you know, the teaching of hobgoblins of a primitive mind, not a primitive man.
Well, absolutely. I mean, universities are insidious places. They really are. They gather people there and they compartmentalize knowledge. That's all they're for. And then they brainwash you and they give you a certificate to say, now you're fully brainwashed. You can go out and brainwash other people, but don't ever think outside of the box. And if anyone ever challenges you and asks you to think outside of the box, you can just wave your degree at them and say, look, I'm more educated than you, so I know more than you. But it's just brainwashing. It's complete brainwashing. And that's why universities and school systems were created, to compartmentalize information and make sure no one ever thinks outside of the box. You know, if you do think outside of the box, you won't make the grades, you won't get passed, you won't get a doctorate, and no one will listen to you. You'll just be one of those kooks. And they train them. I mean, it's brilliant the way they've done it, really. I mean, you've got to really admire the system they've put together for its efficiency.
Yes, I agree. Again, the nature multiplies. A simple example would be you can completely obliterate all of the laws of physics and especially the Newtonian laws, which are ridiculous, where Newton should have stayed under that tree for another 10 years and watched that apple decay into and the seed go back and grow another tree, right? Nature multiplies.
Yeah, well, Newtonian physics had its place. It was an interesting learning curve, but it's been completely thrown out the window now because most of it's wrong.
Yes, I've done some speaking on this, and I've been quickly ushered away very politely. I wish they would have just not been so polite. But one simple example to completely obliterate all of their what their altars of ignorance are is imagine a hall of mirrors, a great hall of mirrors with thousands of mirrors. And just, it's dark, and just light one small candle, and now the entire hall of mirrors is completely brilliantly illuminated. And now, this little tiny candle, which is barely giving off any energy at all, has completely illuminated this great space. And not only has that light never really traveled from the candle, because it didn't, the candle is still burning, so light is not traveling, it's actually reproducing itself on all of the mirrors to infinity. So now you have a brilliant amount of energy and light in the room with a very, very small effect known as, let's say, energy going to magnetism. So just the example of a hall of mirrors being brilliantly lit with a candle completely destroys their thermodynamics and all of the other things. And the light does not actually travel. Like, the light never left the candle. It's actually reproducing on the mirrors. And it's very easy to prove mathematically as well.
Yeah, interesting perspective.
Yes, and I invite people to start thinking. See, we all are having a divine moment every second of our lives, but we don't listen. We allow the senses to distract us. Every second of our life is a divine moment, but we'd rather let our senses deceive us. Let's watch television. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's get some kind of a sensorial experience versus tapping into that stillness of thinking mind that we're all attached to.
Well, we're taught with our left brain all through our education system, and we're taught to basically what to believe. We're basically bereft of imagination, or most people are, because they're limited by what they believe is possible. And what they believe is possible is whatever's written in this book here and whatever was taught to them at university. And don't think outside the box, because if you do, you'll be ridiculed by your peers. And we police ourselves, and we make sure not to express our true feelings, and we keep going to the point where we become numb, and we just don't feel these things anymore. And that happens to a great deal of society. So we have people not only judging us and you know, ridiculing you if you think outside the box, but we actually police ourselves to prevent us from thinking outside the box, so we are not subject to that ridicule. So it's quite insidious. See, we're emotional creatures, and this is an emotionally based reality, and we're taught to always be in fear and always be in judgment of ourselves and never to really be who and what we are. So, I mean, incredibly, incredibly repressed consciousness that we're in at the moment. And, you know, we need to start thinking outside of that, and we need to start realizing the powers that we do have. They need to start realizing what reality is so we can change the reality that we're in, because there are certain forces here that are trying to lead us down a certain direction. And really, it's all about freedom of choice. It's all about whether we choose to be in that fear and stay within the parameters of the box that's provided for us, or whether we choose to break free and to be who and what we are. And I think that's what we're seeing. I think people are waking up to the fact that they are completely controlled. We're basically living in a very, very large open-air prison. And they're starting to realize that there's a much better way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. That's really good point that you just made, Max. But do you have any recommendations on how people can try to break out of that? Because even the ones who think that they're outside the box, maybe because they read something on the internet or they're a little more open-minded than most, they're still in that box. They're still in that matrix. They don't even realize it. They're just in it in a different way. So what would you recommend?
What's worked for me is to give to people. I mean, I've found that if I lose all attachment to any material possessions, then I don't want for anything. And I've actually got more stuff around me now than I've probably ever had. And I've given so much of myself, and I've given so much away that the universe just gives back to me. I'm kind of living this life of synchronicity at the moment where it just all flows. And I spend my life improving reality by my presence in it. That's my only purpose here. I really want to improve things for the people around me and improve the reality that I live in by my presence in it. And because I have that attitude and I do what I do from the heart with good intention and I expect nothing back, things just seem to come back to me when I need them. I mean, I don't live in a state where I'm rolling in wealth, absolutely. I'm living in a tiny little cabin. I don't have a lot. But if ever I need anything, it's always there for me. It always just works out. I'm always where I'm supposed to be. And that's a big part of it. I mean, you've got to get out of the fear. You've got to get out of the fear of the system. I mean, the way I see it, even with the legal system, nobody has any power over me. I mean, we're all just men and women here. We're all just mankind. How can anybody have any power over anybody else? You know, and you can't be scared of the system. You've got to realize the system is fiction. It's just an idea. It only exists on paper. And we can break free of it by being who and what we are. And if you start treating reality like this and treating the people around you like this and start treating the people around you like yourself, as yourself, in Lakesh, then they start treating you the same way. And suddenly you've got this huge support group where everybody gets along. And if anybody gets in trouble with the authorities for some ridiculous statute that they appear to have broken, which isn't a law anyway, then the whole community stands up and says, hey, what's your problem? You know, why are you persecuting one of us? You know, we employ the government to manage our infrastructure, not to create rules that remove our freedoms. That's not what we employ you to do. But you need to have a lot of people thinking like this, and we can start to influence our own evolution. We can take ourselves in a direction where we can regain all of our higher senses, regain all of our lost technology, regain control of who and what we are. But we have to make the choice to do it. And the only way to do it is to remove the fear from our lives. And ultimately, it's a fear of the people around us, and it's a fear of being ourselves, because we are so scared of letting other people see who and what we are. So we police ourselves. We're in this constant state of fear. And we're trained to be in this ever since, as soon as we start school. It's all hierarchical. It's all based on fear. Don't fail the exams. You'll get a D and you'll be a D grade person, you know. It's all even the concept of having exams for children at school and judging them and grading them. I mean, this is demeaning. How can you be in a state of growth and in a state of confidence of yourself if you're classed as a C-grade person, you know what I mean? Because you didn't think with your left brain enough in this test. I mean, it's completely ridiculous what they put the human race through. So it's no wonder we find ourselves in the position that we're in. But I think we can escape it by simply removing the fear. I think that's a really, really big part of it, is the constant fear that's dripping like a tap in the back of people's minds.
Max, may I offer something?
Well, we're really at the end of the hour. It's so unfortunate. And I'm so glad you called in, because that was really excellent question and excellent points that you brought up. But I want to thank the both of you for calling and for coming on with me. Thank you so much, Max. And I only know you as the Greek, my caller. But thank you so much for calling in. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And if you would like more information on Max, I did a post on him on my website, thetruthergirls.wordpress.com, and his website is thecrowhouse.com, and you can find him there. So thank you so much, Max.
My pleasure, Sonia. Anytime.
Thank you, and thanks, everybody, and have a good weekend, and I'll be back next Thursday with Richard Gage from AE 911 Truth.